welcome to another edition of the Super Flight Podcast. I'm Joe Borelli, your host. And with me today, I have a guest in the studio in Brooklyn, Steph Costello.
Hi.
Hi, Steph. Say hi.
Hi, everybody.
So real quick, I'm going to do the ways you can get in touch. If you want to reach out, you can do that. Why am I looking to see? I already know this stuff. you can follow along at Stitcher, SoundCloud, iTunes, and Google Play. If you follow on iTunes, please leave a review and rate so other people can find us. You can email us at thesuperflightpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow on Twitter at Superflight Pod, and I don't know, you could probably send a pigeon my way and I'll just catch it in a net. That'll work. And Steph, my friend, if you want to let's tell them, Steph, how we know each other real quick.
Okay.
And then I'll tell them how to get in touch with you or follow you. Or so Steph and I were friends from how many years ago?
Probably 8 or 9 years ago.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah,
maybe not that long, I don't know. Anyway, yeah, probably about
2008, actually. Yeah.
Right before I met my wife.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Weird. I just moved to New York.
Yeah. I was here for like a year, I think. Anyway, that's my whole life right there. Hope you all enjoy it. So Steph and I know each other from friends. So I don't ever talk about what I do or my life, but because she's here, I'm going to out myself. Steph is an artist. Tell us where you went to...
I'm an artist. I went to Massachusetts College of Art for graduate school, and then we had a bunch of mutual friends who went to Tyler, and you went to Tyler, and eventually worlds collided, and we met and became friends.
There you go. So we were hanging out with mutual friends.
Yeah.
In Coney Island, I think it was. It's the first time I met
you. Oh, yeah, the cyclone.
Yeah, cyclone.
Somebody was scared.
Hmm. It was me, I think.
Yeah, somebody was screaming Serenity Now the whole way up that thing.
It was probably me.
Yeah, it probably was you. Yeah.
That's just, this is an old wooden roller coaster, man. Coasters.
It's the best. The cyclone is one of the best things about New York. Definitely one of the best things about Brooklyn. If you come to Brooklyn and don't ride the cyclone, that's not cool.
We were just there last weekend and I went on every ride but the cyclone. It's just too much.
You're weak, Joe Borelli.
I know, I'm weak. It'll just shake the hell out of you, man. It's too much.
You will wake up the next morning with whiplash.
When I went on that coaster with you, I thought that I broke my neck. I'm not kidding you. Like, I got off that coaster. Do you remember this? I got off that coaster. I was like, oh my God.
I do remember that. And then I think everyone went to eat funnel cakes and then I went back on.
Oh yeah, you did.
Yeah. And then woke up the next morning with a really stiff neck.
Yeah.
It was good.
I went on that other ride though that like you go straight up in the air and then straight down.
I won't do that.
That thing is so much fun.
I won't do that. That's so one thing. Fun. I will not do the dropping ones. That I won't do.
It's good stuff. Anyway, so Steph is an artist. She's also an educator and a bartender by night.
That's right.
It's her superhero alter ego.
Yep.
She has a website. If you guys want to check it out, it's Steph Costello Projects at... It's just...
Yeah, StephCostelloProjects.com.
So it's...
That's it.
StephCostello.
Just like Elvis Costello, that is correct.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice, look at you. And you can also follow her on Twitter at StephRock1. So it's StephRock1.
Yeah, someone gave me that name a long time ago, and that's just it.
Really?
Who was it? My friend Anacron, he's a rapper in L.A.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm.
Look at you.
Yeah.
You also have connections. Like, you know people.
I do.
Yeah.
But that's because that's the life of a bartender. You can't be a bartender and not eventually know everybody.
That's a good point, especially in New York.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You become a little bit of like a priest too, like the way priest isn't supposed to tell anybody anything, like confessionals.
Oh, yeah.
You get a lot of people coming, you get a lot of that. Mm. And it's kind of like a barbershop too, where people, you know, like especially if you work in a neighborhood spot, you get a lot of the neighbors in. And in New York, you get a lot of people in who are high profile people, you know, in various occupations. Very interesting.
That's cool. That's cool.
It's cool.
Sounds like fun.
It's
I know great. You've met a lot of people. I know you have a lot of friends. And some of those friends are, we'll never mention any names, but some of your friends are actually involved in minor ways in the NBA or actually in the NBA.
Minor
maybe.
And major ways, yes. Yeah. But yeah, it just happens. And that's partly, you know, like I said, another thing about working in a bar is you end up, what can you talk about? You can't really talk about politics. You definitely can't talk about religion. Mm. So everybody ends up talking about sports. And that's one of the reasons I started to really get back into basketball again, is because we'd have it on all the time, be talking about it all the time. And the Nets were moving to Brooklyn. So it just became this thing that everybody kind of like galvanized around. And yeah, so then I just was, everybody kind of came to me as like, oh, Steph's the one who likes to talk about basketball. And then I became friends with all these Brooklyn basketball players and referees and all kinds of stuff. And nice. On and on.
And on and on.
Yes.
It's funny because we're going to actually use this hour or however long we go to talk. We're going to do a little bit of a Brooklyn Nets season preview sort of. Because you are a big Nets fan.
Yeah, and there's nothing like talking about one of the teams who's definitely not bound for the playoffs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a Sixers fan, remember?
Yeah, I do. I do. But I think what is interesting about the Nets is that they're kind of a microcosm of changes in the NBA in terms of culture and in terms of management and how to develop a team successfully. And currently they're using the Spurs model. So we can talk about that.
We'll get there. Yeah, we'll get there.
We'll get there.
We're going to do a little dive into some how the NBA and the art world intersect a little bit.
Oh, my God. And it's Fashion Week.
Yeah. And it's Fashion Week. Totally forgot about that. And I should know this because there's been fashion people clogging up the streets near where I work or where I work. Mm-hmm. But I'll never tell you where that is.
I know.
But actually... So you're a Brooklyn Nets fan now, but when I met you, you were a serious Boston fan. Why is that?
I was a fan of that particular team.
Oh, okay.
And I grew up a Bulls fan. This is all going to sound so convoluted for me listening and be like, who the hell is this bandwagon chick? I grew up with, my dad's from Chicago. My family's basically from Chicago. I grew up watching the Bulls. I was really upset when Jordan left and when Phil Jackson left. And then I kind of stopped watching. And then I ended up hating Chicago. And when I left, I was just like, I have no allegiance to Chicago. I changed the area code on my cell phone. That was how much I was happy to leave.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, and actually, I wasn't really much of a Celtics fan when I lived there for graduate school, but I really got into watching them in the playoffs, like kind of starting in 2008, but then really hardcore 2010 against the Lakers. I'm a big fan of Rondo. I'm sure everybody thinks that's I'm out of my mind, but I love Rondo.
I think you're out of your mind. Yeah,
yeah. We can talk about that. I love Paul Pierce. I love Kevin Garnett. I like Doc Rivers. I like Ray Allen. I love the dynamic of and all of them working together. All their different personalities. I loved watching that particular team. I love those players. I still love those players. I'm still a fan of all of those players.
Have you ever met any of them?
I have.
Nice. I hate you.
No, I mean, I met Kevin Garnett once. He's really a very nice person, actually.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but really nice.
It was just kind of a brief meeting, not like we're partying or anything, but
he's such an intimidating person, though.
He's like, very tall.
Like, yeah, well, not even that, like his demeanor. Like anytime you see him on TV or like, you know, he just looks like he's going to bite your damn head off.
Well, he does. Yeah. I mean, he does have that reputation, and he does have a reputation of trash talking pretty much the entire game. Mm. But he was a very polite gentleman when I met him. So, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, you are a lady. you're such a lady. So
that's been in question sometimes. But
anyway, but yeah. So then you when I met you, were a Boston fan. Then the Nets moved to Brooklyn, and you kind of jumped the bandwagon.
I jumped on that bandwagon. You can own it.
Just own it.
I bartended two blocks from the stadium. I was like, I have an NBA team in my backyard.
It's true.
I live in Brooklyn. I'm not leaving. Fuck it. I'm jumping on. And let me tell you, it was not easy because I was not excited about those players. I was not. None of them have... really dynamic personalities at the time. Gerald Wallace was like the one that I was into because he just had like he had fire and he had spirit. Yeah. His game was going down, but at least he was out there playing like he wanted to be there. Especially coming like I loved those Celtics players and they were still playing in Boston. And I was like, ugh. And we like the Nets would play the Celtics and I'd be like, I don't feel this feels weird. I don't know. I love you, Rondo. So
I hate Rondo. I'm sorry. I don't know him personally, but
I don't either. But
I hate the things he says on like
he does. You know what? Yes, he has said some controversial things.
Controversial.
That I cannot abide
like,
by.
Terrible.
Yeah,
like,
really
awful,
bad.
Awful human
You're
being.
Right.
Sorry.
You are right.
I can't get into Rondo. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, I appreciate Rondo very much in the era of the Celtics when he
all right,
and
fine.
He's still triple double king. His intelligence. He's known as one of the smartest players in the NBA. Definitely.
He's
that is
so
not...
smart that he can't keep himself from saying really shitty
well,
things.
Well, that's right. Emotional
Listen, this is neither here nor there.
We don't need to talk about him all day long.
Yeah, let's not. So let's talk about your field. Let's talk about art.
Okay.
So you make some really great artwork. I own some of your artwork, and thanks for selling it to me.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And you've done some artwork for some NBA players.
I have.
Yeah, like murals. You did a mural. Where did you do your latest mural at?
I just did one at a place called Froilan Cafe and Lounge. It's in Bushwick. It's by a longtime Bushwick resident. He was opening up a spot, so I painted a 30-foot mural in the backyard, Puerto Rican-inspired, because that's where he's from. And then I did the signage out front. So if anybody's going down Wilson in Bushwick, you can see that.
Nice. That's where it is. I'll go down Wilson.
You should. Wilson and Cooper is down, you know.
I used to ride by there every day on my bike on my way to work.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. So that's cool. So like, so art and then sports and
art
how
and sports.
These things don't mix, right?
Did they mix, Joe, did they mix for you in high school?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I was a big football guy. So I only got I only got really into basketball like in 2001 when the Sixers went to the championship around that era. Yeah. I mean, I was always like, you know, when I was a kid when Dr. J was still in the Sixers. So it was always in the periphery. And then Barkley came up and like, you know, obviously I'm in my 40s. So there you go.
Yeah.
So I'm just outing everything about myself today. But
you know, but a lot of artists have this thing, like especially, you know, high school, I think is kind of the time you get divided into like who you are and your personality and you align yourself with certain camps. Like you're either an artist or you're
a jock.
And maybe that's just like 80s era movies. I don't know.
It could be.
You know,
I think it still happens. Do you remember in grad school? Like, was it the same way? Because it totally was for me.
I don't know, because I went to Mass Art, which was a I don't think very pretentious art school at all. And I think in although, you know, I did take classes at the Art Institute the final year of the Chicago Bulls championship 97-98 season, okay? And I remember I had on a Bulls t-shirt, right? And I was going to this printmaking class. And the only other person in there who was like high five and me over my Jordan shirt was the instructor, and she was like, "I know, honey. She's like, "Nobody here likes sports. It's weird. I know."
Yeah, it's a weird thing. You have to either be one or the other. I think there's a huge intersection of sport and art and culture like that happens. I think they influence each other a lot, right?
They do, but I think it's specifically basketball.
You think it's basketball
more
only?
Basketball, well, not only, but more than anything. And, you know, I grew up...
I would say soccer. I think there's a lot of artists into soccer for some reason.
Oh, no, absolutely. Yeah, no, you're right about that.
Yeah.
But anyway. I think in terms of the larger culture, I think in terms of the way culture, like popular culture, I would say in the U.S., popular culture, I think, say, you know, especially visually, especially through music, it's all basketball.
So let's talk about why do you think that is? Why is it basketball specifically? What is it about basketball and art that coincides, it fits so well together?
Partly because, I mean, basketball itself is an art form.
Yeah,
I think
right?
Can we agree on that?
Yeah, totally. It's kind of a beautiful thing to watch. Like, I was thinking about, we talked about Dave Hickey's essay.
Yeah, yeah.
The art, or the heresy of zone defense. Anyways, if you guys have never heard or thought about basketball as like art philosophy or something, check that essay out. It's really good. You can find it online everywhere.
Yeah, it's in his book, Air Guitar.
Yeah.
And it's an essay from like 20 years ago, but it's totally applicable
right now.
Yeah,
it's so good.
And I remember also, you know, there was an article in the New York Times. I think a choreographer from the San Francisco Ballet waxed poetically about Steph Curry's game and had like modeled dance on Steph Curry's game.
Hmm.
So I think there's, I think there's a... There's something rhythmic and fluid and elegant and beautiful and improvised about that exists in basketball that does not exist in our most popular sport,
which is football. Right.
Which is very militaristic, very strategic.
Right.
And that was something, you know, I grew up watching a lot of football because I grew up in Green Bay, Wisconsin, football capital of the world, I know. But I think at some point I saw it as too violent. I couldn't.
It's totally too violent. That's what's pushing me away from it right now is the concussions and the lies about what's happening. I'm sorry. Let's not even get into that. But
Well,
basketball,
also,
yeah, it's totally.
Yeah, and it stays fluid. It doesn't stop. You know, if football is like, 3 hours for 30 minutes of action.
Mm-hmm.
And
basketball
is like
non-stop.
Action the whole time.
Yeah.
And it's not so planned. It's not it's like it doesn't exist like a war.
Right.
In a way.
So actually, that reminds me of the essay that, you know, Dave Hickey, even in it, he mentions that in football, we love it because it reminds us it is about taking land from each other, and it's about two nations colliding and sort of a war type thing. And in basketball, it really is just like art. It's like movement. It's sort of like jazz. Somebody else is, wasn't it?
Yeah, Phil Jackson. Phil Jackson writes about that, I think, in 11 Rings.
Which I've never read, but.
It's awesome. He's my guru. We'll get into that later.
Yeah. I don't really read sports books. I don't know why. I barely read like books for entertainment.
I listen to them on audiobooks while I'm drawing. So I've listened to a lot of ones. Yeah, I can give you recommendations later. But yeah, Phil Jackson said the same thing. And he kind of talked about how, you know, when his best Bulls team, and I don't know if it was the 96 Bulls, I think he was talking about how they had this particular style of play that was almost like jazz, the way they moved together so easily and the way they played off of each other, which is another interesting thing that happens in basketball is you're not just one-on-one play, but then team play, how you're constantly, you know, getting to know each other and learning how to riff off of each other the same way a musician might.
Right. I think some of that exists in probably every sport, but yeah, I think in basketball it's very... I think it's very obvious.
Yeah, in part because it's quicker, too. Yeah.
It's constant movement. You're not allowed to carry the ball where you are in football. You have to be moving. You have to, like, someone can take the ball from you at any time.
Right.
You always have to be moving. So there's a lot of quickness. There's a lot of movement. And the best teams are obviously really good at passing and sharing the ball and orchestrating and having each other, you know, assist on every play.
Right. And
I don't know where I was going with that, but
we could just talk forever about how beautiful it is.
It is a beautiful game.
It is. And, you know, but I think another thing, you know, for artists and especially I know for both of us, we are artists. I think we've talked about this before that I don't want to say reject the art world status quo, but there's a lot of uncomfortable aspects of the art world. It talks about in this Dave Hickey essay too, where things get to be there's become too many rules in art that come out of these academic programs, and you know art can be very self-conscious, especially if you have an MFA and you're coming through that. And I think it's really refreshing as artists to like just watch basketball, and you kind of you feel free even watching it.
For me, there's something about it too that it's like in the art world, I feel very cut off from other people. I feel very solitary and alone most of the time. You know, the idea of the artist as like an individual and like, whatever. You're always alone. You're always in your studio and blah, 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 blah. And I think just something within me wants to watch a sport to feel like I'm part of something bigger to begin with. You know what I mean?
Oh, like, totally.
This is just an aside. I don't even know why I brought that up, but
no, but that's, well, I think that's a very important point. And I think that, I mean, that's probably why a lot of people in general watch sport,
right? Because because you are part of something bigger, or at least you can attach the sense of self to something that's bigger, to community, to like, without ever having to leave your seat and go outside and talk to people, you know that you're rooting. And so when you see somebody else that's rooting for the same team, like, and you have these signifiers like caps and shirts and like, you instantly have something in common. Sport is a huge way to unite the world. Whereas art, I feel like a lot of times divides us. And Dave Hickey talks in this, art doesn't divide us. Sorry. It's also meant to bring us together. But as the artist, I feel very divided from everything that's happening.
I do too. And also, you know, for us as visual artists, I can put my work out there in the world, right? So say the gallery that sells my drawing, they have sold work to people I don't know that I will never meet. Yep. I have no idea what those people think of my work, what they love about it. It's just out there and now it's gone and they have it. Yeah. And there's no connection.
Right. It's not a one-to-one relationship.
Right.
The ratio is very skewed and not in your favor.
Right.
But he, you know, I'll say this just a little bit more about the essay is that, like, I love the fact that he starts off the whole thing with the Sixers and the Lakers in the 80s finals, and he talks about Dr. J's behind.
Is that your man?
That's, well, you know, Iverson, but I'll talk about Iverson in a bit. Anyway. We wanted to talk about a little bit how it intersects though. So we're just talking about like how it's different and like why we were, I don't know if I was ostracized, but people definitely in my life through the years have been like, oh, you like sports. It's so lowbrow, you know?
Well, and there's a huge commercial aspect to it too. Yeah. And people relate it so much to corporate identities and, you know, corporate sponsorships and all of the money involved in it. And actually,
by the way, if you think that there's no money in the art world, you're freaking fooling yourself.
Oh, my God. You are crazy.
Yeah. the reason the art world is constantly under the watchful eye of the government is because there is so much money controlled by so few people for like such little stuff. You know, it's anyway.
Right.
Let's move on. I'm going to get myself in trouble.
Well, it's in everything. I just find it ridiculous that people try to find some type of purity in the art world, as if, you know, there's, you know, something would not be corporate. It's everywhere. It's in every aspect of culture.
And this is going to be strictly philosophical, but there is no purity anywhere. It does not exist.
We're all dirty.
We're all dirty.
Yep.
But you were talking about fashion, and we were talking about music. Like part of the intersection happens, I think, a lot in music and NBA specifically. There are, like, even Damian Lillard is a rapper, and actually a really good one. Have you ever heard his stuff?
Yeah, he's pretty good.
He's pretty good.
And he actually talks about things.
Yeah. Which is lacking in the hip hop community these days.
Shouting out luxury items.
I got money, bitches. Yeah. I've listened to a few of his things, and like, he's pretty good. He's pretty good. I mean, he's not like, you know, he's not like Biggie, but he's good.
I think that's a pretty safe statement, Joe.
Thanks. I'm a genius.
Well, we're saying this is Fashion Week too, and I think, and talking about hip hop, and obviously Allen Iverson just got inducted into the Hall of Fame, and he was really one of the largest figures, as he's like the figure you can point to and say that was a basketball player that identified hip hop culture in basketball.
Absolutely. His influence went beyond the basketball court too. Like, he was that influential. His style changed a lot. Like, I don't know if it changed anything, maybe. But he was so influential. Like, he didn't give a shit. Sorry. By the way, congratulations, Allen Iverson. One of my favorite sports figures of all time. He was so problematic when he was in Philadelphia, but he never, ever questioned his heart. And
Did you cry during his speech?
No, I saw it after the fact. Okay. I just got to watch it yesterday, finally. You saw it, yeah? Right?
I did.
Did you cry?
No.
Yeah.
I thought it was really endearing that he was so choked up for at least half of it, and
that's him. That's him in a nutshell. That's why we loved him, and that's also why people like didn't like him. But he always wears his heart on his sleeve, even to his detriment, you know.
Yeah.
But it made him such a great player, so good, so good. He never backed down. I like did you see this Shaq speech too?
I did not watch the Shaq speech, but I do like Shaq.
Shaq's really good, and his speech was like on point. He was totally, it was scripted. I don't know if he wrote it himself. He may have been able to, I don't know, but it was written. He did the whole thing, and like, it was really good. But he gave a little story about Iverson and how, like, you know, the first time he played Iverson was coming into the lane, and then Shaq was just like putting him on his ass, and he just kept coming back. He's like, I had a decision to make. He's like, either I kept touching him up and I'm going to sit on the bench, or I let him go. And he's like, I had to let him go. He's like, congratulations, AI. So it was dope. That's what Allen Iverson was.
Yeah.
He was not only a cultural icon, which he knew and does know, but he was also like just, I mean, I think he wouldn't even have had that impact on culture without the heart he played with.
Yeah, and the tenacity.
The tenacity, yeah. He's just an incredible player, I guess. Yeah. Incredible person, too, sort of. Like, I don't know. Really, I mean, I guess I know a lot about his life, but I probably shouldn't comment on any of that.
Yeah, I don't know too much.
Sorry, I'm dominating the conversation.
No,
Please talk.
No, not at all. I mean, one of the things that I also respected is he stood up when David Stern imposed the, you know, the fashion restrictions in 2005, when he imposed this dress code on the NBA. He was, you know, Iverson stood up and said, this is racist. And you're basically linking, he said, you know, I think his quote was something like, just because, you know, he's like, you can be a murderer and dress in a suit and tie.
Yeah.
Basically. A suit and tie doesn't not make you a murderer. The same way you can dress in a hip hop style and not be a criminal.
Right.
And he was really defending it and saying it was a racist practice.
I've kind of always felt that a little bit, but also I do like to see the guys dressed in suits. I love the good style.
You and Clyde Frazier.
Really?
Oh yeah. He also advocated for it. He, you know, his argument was, if you are getting paid like a millionaire, you need to dress like a millionaire.
Yeah.
But this is, you know, again, this is, you know, where the culture aspect of this is, where the, you know, how basketball has been able to influence fashion so much was actually totally tied into that decision too. I mean, it certainly has the legacy of coming out, you know, there's the Fab Five first. They start dressing in loose clothing and black socks, and then comes Iverson. But then these fashion restrictions, which were imposed after the whole Malice in the Palace, mm-hmm. 2004. If anybody doesn't know about it, you just have to look it up and watch it.
You
don't watch basketball. but, you know, David Stern wanted to have he's like, okay, the NBA, we need to polish our brand and our image, so let's impose this dress code. And what was interesting was how players kind of took it, and they're like, you know what? Well, let's take these rules, and we'll find ways to bend them to our style.
Mm-hmm.
And so LeBron James, one of the first people to have a personal stylist, and was also the first person on the first black man on the cover of Vogue in 2008, in a controversial cover with Giselle. Yeah,
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, check it out. But once people kind of, like, he started bringing in his stylist, these stylists started working for everybody. So all the players have stylists now, and basically. The tunnel after the games during the playoffs is now a fashion runway as well.
How so? Tell me, explain that
they
to me.
They have fashion photographers now come with lights.
In the tunnel. At the playoff games. At every arena.
Steph Curry has a quote saying he basically, you know, a couple days before the game, he'll be like stressing out about what to wear.
Really? Oh, yeah. You're talking about when they're leading into the locker room.
When they're coming from their cars to the locker room.
Oh, yeah, when you see them get off the bus.
It's a runway. Everybody's like, what is Russell Westbrook going to wear?
Yeah, it's true. I didn't even think. I mean, you think about it now because you're inundated with it. You see it all every time there's a playoff series. Like, oh, that guy was dressed really well. You know, Westbrook, of course, is like.
Yeah.
All eyes on Westbrook.
Well, and I think he has a deal with Barney's a three-season deal with Barney's to do like 62 items for them.
Shit.
And, you know, Steph Curry's a model for Express.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's very much tied in. I mean,
I personally love it. I think it's great.
I do too.
I don't know, because, you know, where do you think I get my fashion tips from? The NBA. That's right.
Absolutely. Listen, do you have a favorite dresser in the NBA? Anybody's personal style you admire?
So, like, obviously you can point to Westbrook. Westbrook's a little bit too hipster for me. I'm not really...
He goes a little crazy. I admire the
courage it takes to put on some of those outfits.
He's like an avant-garde artist, Joe.
Yeah.
Pushing the envelope every week.
He's Duchamp.
He's like, I'm going to wear a kilt.
Yeah.
And silver.
That would be cool. Now, I don't know, I'm trying to think of who dresses really well. I know somebody stood out to me. Stoudemire's barely even in the NBA, though. You can't really point to him.
Yeah, come on. But he was a stalwart of it.
Contemporary. Yeah, that's true.
And isn't he
a painter as well?
Stoudemire? Yeah, I guess someone said he had a painting show at some point, maybe 2 years ago. One of my friends was telling me that he'd gone to his opening or something, and Mello was there.
That's pretty amazing.
One thing that is really cool about Amari, and actually a lot of other NBA players, I'm going to say a lot, but several of them have become avid art collectors. And Stoudemire is an avid art collector and promoter of a lot of artists. Yeah,
that's awesome. I really like it when popular or famous people or people with money support like up and coming artists or artists who haven't been in the spot. Like it's easy to buy a Jeff Koons. Well, I guess it's not easy if you have money,
right?
But to buy from like someone like you or me, that's really admirable, because then I feel like they're not in it for the commodities aspect that art has become. They're into it for the actual artwork, you know?
Yeah.
So that feels way better to me. And I feel like that's the kind of collector he is.
Yeah, definitely.
That was my point. There you go.
Yeah. Amari. Playing Amari. In Israel now.
He is playing in Israel, isn't he?
Yeah.
So who's the dresser? Who's the best dressed NBA player right now?
Well, I don't know about best dressed, but okay. And this might be generic, but I like Kobe's style. Yeah. He's like the type of person who he'll wear like a printed shirt under a blazer and always looks so comfortable. I think that's the thing, is he never looks like someone else is dressing him. He looks like he's dressing himself, and he looks good. Of course, everything's tailored.
That's the sign of a good stylist.
Mm-hmm. Maybe he does have a good... I would say another person who, you know, I don't know if I like all of his choices, and a lot of people... Yeah, Nick Young. okay? Like, Nick, yeah, swaggy I had to put it out there to let you swaggy say swaggy Pete.
Yeah, he is a good dresser.
But
fine.
No, and this is why, because, again, it's his style. He's comfortable in it.
Yeah, that's
you
true.
Never see him in a photo, and he might look he's crazy got... wearing long shorts, but though you're like, he's he wanted swag. To wear long shorts. He's got swag he's in got his swag. Weird swaggy P way.
I was going to say LeBron. LeBron just jumps to mind right away. That was a really loud ding, sorry.
Okay.
But, you know, because LeBron's in the spotlight, I'm trying to think of guys.
He's
that,
so
like,
preppy, though, too, though. But that could be. I mean,
it's fine. It's an aesthetic.
It is. Well, the other thing about both LeBron and Melo, too, and this is to get into physique, is they don't quite, you know, fashion models tend to be like long and lean.
Yeah.
And they're a little bit more bulky. So
for me, Melo always dressed like he's coming off the set of Miami Vice in 1985.
Oh, well, I don't know about Melo, but Dwayne Wade for sure. With the short
pants. No, Wade. I kind
of
like Wade.
Lots of pink.
Yeah. Wade was the one the really risky dress before Westbrook was. Like, he came out with the capri pants, man.
Yeah, I'm not into the
capri. Not into them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the low crotch. I hate the low crotch. I can't take it. Yeah, low crotch. Not into it. But anyway, so NBA, sports, you know, music, fashion.
Yeah, we don't even need to talk about music. I think anybody listening could list more references than we possibly could.
Yeah, I can't do the music thing. I mean, I make music. I just can't talk about it. I can't talk about it.
I can't. I just think it's so obvious. You know, Jay-Z and Drake, like, what else, you know?
I know. It's way too easy, way too accessible. I mean, I'm sure everybody in every sport listens to music. It's just,
but the tie-ins to basketball are just so clear.
But if we do that, we have to get into the whole like urban culture, sort of like plucking kids from the schoolyards and like selling them this dream that they're going to make money and like, you know, this that documentary. What was the documentary that we talked about
that I told you to watch?
Yeah, that I still haven't watched.
Oh my god, it's Hoop like Dreams.
Hoop Dreams, like it's the most famous documentary about basketball.
Hoop
like,
Dreams is amazing.
Yeah, and I'll watch it one day. Anyway, but that's the, you know, that whole time. We don't need to go in there. Let's not do it. But look, I do want to ask you about you going to Rio.
Oh my god,
you went to the Rio Olympics. Awesome. Although you didn't watch any basketball while you were there.
I didn't watch any basketball, but I mean, and this is partly. Listen, if somebody had tickets available, then I would definitely have gone to watch basketball. But I didn't know I was going until 3 months before. And I think those basketball tickets were sold out so long ago. Yeah. And if they were not, I could not afford them. And I'm like, why would I spend any money when I can see the best basketball in the world oftentimes for free in New York?
Oh,
so,
by the way, next time you have connections for a free game, call me.
I will.
Yeah,
I will.
You should.
I will.
Because you've been to, 60 Brooklyn Nets games now?
I have.
Yeah.
Less though, less and less as time goes on. But anyway, I went to Rio and I did not see any Team USA. I did not see Team USA out on the streets. I heard they were out. I don't know.
Yeah,
I didn't see them.
They were going into brothels and shit. Like
allegedly, but those stories.
Allegedly, no, it's true. There's
they
no,
didn't know it was a brothel.
Yeah, that's the alleged part.
No, but everybody goes. Listen, people go to strip clubs. People go to bars. Like it's just a fact.
Yeah,
they didn't know it's a brothel. They really didn't know. They probably had the wrong handlers and the wrong promoters. I don't see it as like, oh, you know, so-and-so wanted to go have sex with a prostitute. Like,
I didn't say that. I'm just saying that,
yeah, but that's the way it came off in the press. Not by you, but...
You just really like people, and you feel like the best of them is always going to shine, don't you?
No, because I'm a bartender, actually. And that's the thing, is I think a lot of times people say, you know, they have this idea that, you know, the guy who dresses in the suit is always a good guy. The guy who does not is the bad guy, mm-hmm. whatever.
Same thing
and you realize it's actually the opposite most of the time.
Yeah.
That, you know, the quote-unquote bad boy is usually minding his business and being cool.
All right.
Yeah. You know, and I think that I think that about everything in life, I think in general, you know. So that's why I'm willing to give NBA players a little bit of leeway.
All right, fine.
Not that they don't go out and party harder than anybody else, but...
Did you pay attention to any of the games while you were in Rio?
I did not pay any attention to any of the basketball games either. And I could tell who was playing based on where I was staying. I could definitely tell when Brazil was playing and if they were winning just by, you know, the bar across the street from where I was staying. But
well, don't feel bad because I didn't pay attention to any of it.
No, you didn't. And here's you had mentioned on your last podcast about the 100 meter. I think we wanted to talk about
it. Oh, let's clear that up because I'm a
dummy.
Wanted
to clarify. Yeah. And I was listening to this and going, 9.0, no, for everybody, the record in the 100 meter is 9.59.
Which is insanely fast.
It is by Usain Bolt, who I got to watch twice.
That's awesome.
And it was amazing. It was really cool. And
well, tell the coolest part. That.
My friend was supposed to run. That was why I went. So my friend was supposed to run the 100 meter and fortunately pulled his hamstring the week before. And this is a very unassuming friend who, when we met through a situation, had no idea. Me and everyone else had no idea he had was actually an Olympian.
Well, can we say the situation is that you work with him? Is that okay?
Yeah, okay, whatever. But let's not go much further than that. And, you know, it's just his business. He might not want people to know.
Yeah, that's fine. That's true.
Whatever. So, yeah, but unfortunately he didn't run, but that's how we got down there. But what's really cool to know an Olympian is that they give you so much insight into what happens. And prior to that, I was really dumb too. Like, oh, you just have to be able to run really fast. Like your body's just, you know, whoever runs the 100 meters, just a freak of nature, mm-hmm. you know? And, you know, while it is, you know, you do have to, I don't know, whatever. I don't know what I'm trying to say here, but, there's so much work that goes into it. It's basically trying to turn your body into a machine for 10 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And like, Joe, did you know they hold their breath for the first 30 meters of the race?
How would I know that?
you're not friends with an Olympian.
Exactly. Yeah, the only lucky one here.
No, listen, when they say set, and you'll hear it, you might not hear it, but on TV, but when they say set, everybody goes, you hear them all suck in. They're all sucking in, and as soon as the gun pops 30 meters in, then they exhale.
That's so weird. Why? What is the advantage of doing that, I wonder?
There's the three different segments of the race, and I think the middle portion is acceleration, where then you inhale for the next 30 to 40 meters you're inhaling, which, by the way, listen, 30 meters sounds like a lot, but they run it in three point something seconds.
That's true.
So it's not really like you're swimming underwater.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, then they inhale, then they hold their breath again for the last
hour.
But anyway, very interesting dynamics to running all of that.
But you know what, though? Not to cut you off, but this is all very fascinating. And I want to learn how to hold my breath while I run. No, I don't. But even though neither of us watched any of the NBA basketball, you did notice that Melo was down there doing a lot of community work, right?
I knew that. And that was partly because I was still connected to social media. So certainly I was paying attention to certain stories, like the Lochte story.
Oh, God.
I know. And that was irritating, too, because everybody was so worried, like, oh, Rio's going to be this crazy, you know.
It's a Zika cesspool.
Zika cesspool, and you're going to get robbed and murdered, and it's
people
like...
did get robbed and murdered, I think, but I think that
I
was like... not around the...
Listen, people
listen,
probably
people
got...
people get murdered everywhere
got,
all the time.
I'm sure people got robbed on this somewhere on this block in the same period of time.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
So it's, you know, everywhere is dangerous.
But this block is not making national media. I'm just saying.
This is true. So, A, no reported cases of Zika.
That's
in
good.
Rio during the Olympic period. Just be smart with your things. Don't leave your cell phone out on a table and walk away from it. It's going to get stolen.
That's a good point.
You know, don't go into a favela if you don't know where you're going and don't know who you're going with. You know, you just have to know. It's like anywhere you travel in the world.
You are just talking common sense. I don't want to hear any more
okay,
of that.
Okay, but Mello, yes. I thought that was one of the things that was cool. While you have this like mainstream story of Lochte, you know, being a jackass and, you know, exploiting what people were already scared of. And then, you know, contrary to that, you have Mello being like, hey, everybody, look at me. I'm in a favela where I'm very comfortable hanging out, sitting on this plastic chair. Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to play some basketball with kids and they're not dribbling and it's so cute.
I saw some of those videos. You know, I was said, like, I did a podcast by myself last week because Mike's not been around, but and I was talking about how Mello has been an advocate for anti-gun violence and, you know, what else would we say about that? Anti-violence. He's been an advocate for what?
Well, for Black Lives Matter.
Black Lives Matter.
And for basically coming out and saying, you know, NBA players and athletes in general have to do more than put out a tweet.
Yeah.
And that it's time to take action. So I think, you know, seeing him do these things is actually him demonstrating how to do things.
I think that, like, most athletes would have gone and played with kids anyways. But still, I like that he's getting in the spotlight rather, a little bit more with a positive
Yeah, but you know what? I don't know if most athletes would have gone and done that. I think that was something he probably wanted to do. And I don't think he generally just did it as a PR stint. And even if he did, I don't mind because it's, you know, it opposes what Lochte did. And I think it's like,
Like
this is how to be a role model, not just as an athlete, but as an American abroad. And so I was all about it.
I totally agree with you. I think he's kind of, as he's aging in the NBA, I think he's taking on more of that mentorship. I mean, it's like pretty obvious and pretty well known that he's taking more of that mentorship role on and more of a, you know, a positive, what's the word?
Advocacy.
There you go. Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
My words are failing me right now. Yeah,
but I think and another thing, you know, another reason I appreciate the NBA in general is I think they do more than other sports leagues do things to advocate for social causes and put themselves out there and make it part of their platform.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
I appreciate it too. You think he's going to have a good season?
I do think he's going to have a good season. I have to tell you, I don't, being a Nets fan, mm-hmm. I was not a fan of any of the Knicks players, but now I'm willing to watch.
That's, you know, that's kind of what I was talking about last week when I did this thing. And I'm like, I wasn't a big, I hated Melo when he was in Denver. I didn't hate him personally. Like, I don't hate any of them personally, except for maybe Rondo, because he's proving himself to be a horrible person. But maybe Derrick Rose, too, because he's got that whole rape thing going on. It's just,
that's
gross.
I don't know enough details about that. I don't even want to talk about
it. Yeah. Anyway, but like his advocacy and his like being in the spotlight for positive issues has really turned me around. He's talking more about like learning to share the ball more and blah 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 and bringing younger players along. I'm really turning a corner with him. I'm starting to actually appreciate his game and what a really good player he is. I think he's going to have a good year.
Yeah, and you know, I like you. I kind of bought into the narrative too that he was, because he wasn't a great defender, and
I think he
seemed to like, because he took so many shots, that he was like a selfish ball player, and maybe in many instances he was, but now I think when you see it's that idea of like how you do something is how you do everything. So when someone's doing something off the court that is, you know, very unselfish, you then apply that to how they must be playing the game, whether it's true or not. There's got to be a part of it that is true, whether it's in the locker room or somewhere. You start to see him, well, that guy's probably a team player.
Yeah. It all matters.
It does.
Mean, it really does. Like the persona that you put out there in your personal life is going to carry over onto the court and vice versa. You know?
Right.
It's why people, not to get back to Iverson, but like that's why we loved him, because he put his heart on the court and like he lived that way too. It's also got him in trouble, but whatever.
Right.
I don't know. I just forgot what I was going to say about Melo, but sure, good for Melo.
We're fans now.
Let's talk about the Nets, since we're talking about New York, and we're in New York.
Let's
talk about the Nets' upcoming season.
The team that I'm sure nobody else wants to talk about unless you are a Nets fan.
Yeah, well.
But
I'm actually not, but I'm willing to talk about
them. I know. So. and even me too, I can't say. Three years ago when they brought in Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett, obviously, as I had watched them when I watched them on the Celtics, I was very excited about that.
Right.
And so now it is kind of hard to be like, as a fan, what do I have to be excited about? But what I have to be excited about is the change in the culture that I'm hyped about the new GM, I'm hyped about the new coach, and I really like the young players. And that's something I know that's been out in the press lately too, is just that the players have started to say how, and Lopez and the younger players have said how everybody's excited to go to practice now, and that they go to practice and they really work hard and everybody really wants to be there. So there's a total shift in tone, versus, you know, the apathy that was very much attributed, and to, you know, Deron Williams. I think everyone saw him, fans, everybody saw him like as this really apathetic figure who was just like bummed that he had to play basketball in New York. And you're like, are you kidding me? Basketball in New York. What's wrong with you?
Never one of my favorite players. Never really liked him as a player. I don't know him. But again, I feel like the same thing with Deron Williams as we were just talking about with Melo. Like the way he plays on the court, I felt like he's like exactly how he is in real life. You know what I mean? He's just like,
well, body language says a lot.
Says a lot. Yeah.
You know, Although, you know, I think Darren Williams has also done a lot of stuff for charity.
No, he has. I mean, yeah.
But
I'm not saying he's a horrible person.
No,
I'm just like,
more
I don't.
Of a private person, yeah. More of a family person. In basketball, you kind of get the idea that basketball is not the most important thing in his life
and that's
at
fine.
All.
Stop playing basketball, you
well, yeah,
stop
exactly.
ruining the game for me, you
take,
asshole.
Take $20 million yeah. from somebody else.
Go away. Actually, you know, I felt differently about, like, I know you were excited to get your Boston guys here in Brooklyn when
yeah.
they came. I hated that trade. I was like, all those trades.
Well,
I was
it's
like,
not
you?
Working out for them so well now.
Well, first, right, exactly. Well, first, as soon as they hired Billy King as their GM, I was like, oh my God, this is going to be a bad idea. He traded Iverson away. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
I won't co-sign Billy King because I am not okay. I'm very happy they let him go.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
you know, people have also defended him, saying that, like, he just did what Prokhorov wanted. Okay, fine, whatever, but still, he's never proved himself to be a good GM anywhere along the way. He could have put much better teams around Iverson, and they maybe would have been able to win a championship at some point. Never did that.
Right, and well, I think part of being a GM is you have to be able to assert yourself and have a plan of how you are going to develop things, and you really have to develop things, you have to develop a culture, and I think, well, that's, you know... That's what the Nets, I think, are trying to do right now, is they're saying, you know, you can't, he saw, let's bring in KG and Pierce to change the culture on the floor. And yeah, they did change the locker room, but you can't, when guys are there for 1 year,
yeah.
that doesn't change anything. No. And you need continuity. You can only have continuity through the organization.
Well,
you cannot depend on players for continuity.
Totally. I'll say this. I, so far, really like the job that Sean Marks is doing, but also, you have no choice but to start over. They have no option but to do this. So,
but he's making moves.
He's making some nice moves.
Well, even he's known as a very likable guy
mm-hmm.
in NBA and in NBA circles. People really like working with him. They really respect him. And here's one thing I noticed. So right away, he waves Joe Johnson,
yeah.
right? Because he meets with the players. You know, you meet with players. You talk to them about what you want. He meets with Joe Johnson. It's very clear he does not want to be in Brooklyn. So what does he do? I'm going to waive you. You don't want to be here? It's cool. I respect you as a player, and I want you to be happy.
Right.
Now, here's the thing. All these guys hang out with each other in the off season. They might not be on the same team, but if you played with them last year, you're on your phone going back and forth. You're still talking to them,
you're
right?
You're like, what's up? What's
Word
going on
Word gets around very oh, yeah. quickly. And if you are playing for a team you like, or if you're like, oh, hey, that Marks guy is cool. He let me go. That's pretty cool. You might have that same person you're talking to, maybe he's trying to be recruited down the road, and they'll be like, oh, well, that's a good guy. That's a good place to go. Like, all of those things matter.
Yeah, which was exactly the argument people made against Sam Hinkie when he was in Philadelphia. Like, he's just cutting guys. He's just like, I don't even want to get into it. I'm a Hinkie guy, so anyway.
Okay.
Let's not go there.
One person.
If you ask Mike, I always bring it back to the Sixers somehow. Anyway.
Well, you should. That's your team.
Yeah, I guess. But I shouldn't.
And you're also going through a rebuild, though, too. How do you... who's Jerry Colangelo?
Listen, let's not even talk about the Sixers this podcast. Let's not. Oh, we're talking about a Brooklyn Nets preview.
It's relatable.
Yeah. Well, Nets.
Yeah, Nets. Yeah. New coach Kenny Atkinson.
Yeah, so he was an assistant coach under Budenholzer last year, or since what, 2013?
No, he was with the Knicks in 2012.
Oh, okay.
So he was with the Rockets, then the Knicks, and then I believe with the Hawks.
Yeah.
And I guess we should probably also mention that Sean Marks is coming out of the Spurs.
Yeah.
So that was pretty much the big draw. So people, I think, are looking at, like, what are the most successful franchises.
And everyone plucks from the
Spurs
tree.
Yeah, they wanted to keep him, too.
Everybody is, like, becoming a pop
yep.
guy now. Like, you know, even Atkinson, he didn't learn under Pop directly, but he learned under Budenholzer, who did learn under Pop. So it's
yeah.
like that. It's the Popovich tree.
Well, I can tell you one thing. Someone I know in the Knicks organization was, as soon as Atkinson got hired, told me that he was jealous. He was the jealous that the Nets got Atkinson. He's like, oh, that guy's a really good guy.
Really?
And he's like, he will be a really good coach.
That's good. That's
so,
really good.
Yeah. And well, that's another thing. You know, obviously their biggest pickup this summer was Jeremy Lin, who, you know, for, I guess, everybody else would be like, oh, who cares? You got Jeremy Lin. But the interesting thing is that he worked Atkinson, when he was on the Knicks, worked one-on-one with Jeremy Lin. And Atkinson's a point guard. So, you know, was able to relate to him very well. And really, people credit him for being able to really bring the best out of Jeremy Lin.
For the whole
insanity
thing.
For Linsanity.
Yeah.
Oh,
Linsanity is going to come back. You know that, right?
I hope it does.
Yeah, it was fun. It was really
so
fun.
If you were living in New York at the time, do you remember how all of a sudden it was like the bar where I worked, you know, out of nowhere, we had a Lin jersey hanging in the window.
I know. It's crazy. Like overnight, he just went from being like nobody ever heard of this kid to like putting up crazy stats. Crazy stats. I don't even remember what he was putting up. I think he scored 30 points two nights in a row with like 15 assists or something like that.
He had 26 points for the first 6 or 8 games he played, yeah. I think, or the first, well, of the Linsanity period. Right. But he had, I remember the game, I think I was, where one of my neighborhood spots I used to hang out, which is a big basketball place, like a restaurant / basketball place, and it was a Laker game, and he scored 38 points on Kobe.
Yeah, yeah.
And
he was like,
all the Knicks fans lost it. Like, New York lost its collective mind.
It was fun.
He's coming back. It's gonna be like a Disney movie again, except it's gonna be in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be cool. I wanna be a fan of
which
the Nets.
By the way, work really well for Brooke Lopez since he loves all things Disney.
I know. Such a goober. So I love nerdy. Him for it, but he's such a goober.
So nerdy.
I love nerds. I think Lin's going to be fun in New York, back in New York. Although he had some really weird things to say about it when they asked him. He was like, well, it's going to be less hot than than Charlotte. I was like, really? Really?
Yeah, who knows? Yeah. I didn't listen to it.
He's apparently a really weird guy. I don't know. Yeah, I never knew this. His hair is weird.
I think his hair speaks for that, maybe.
I think his hair is it's coming on its own shuttle.
So yeah.
It's going to arrive before him.
But I'm actually, you know, oh, man. I wouldn't say I got like emotional or enthusiastic about Lin coming here. I was like, okay, that's cool. But I am really excited about the younger players.
Totally agree.
And the two younger players who were injured before, it'll be really interesting to see what happens. You know, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson.
Yes.
I was really excited about him because he does have that charisma you do need in a franchise. You do need a player who's like getting the crowd hyped, getting everybody excited. Yeah. And he has so much personality. Crazy draft day outfit.
I don't even remember
it. It was wild. Look it up.
Speaking of crazy draft day outfits, Caris LeVert. I didn't see it. Oh my God, it's so good. He dressed in the Michigan colors, but it was like blue and yellow down the sides. It was the best freaking outfit I've ever seen. I think it was down the sides. I don't know. It was really cool.
Oh, yeah. Draft Day is another fashion show.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
It's a total fashion show.
Oh, speaking of art and NBA, Caris LeVert's uncle, I think it's Eddie LeVert. It was a singer in the OJs.
No way.
Yeah. And his dad apparently was a graphic designer before he passed away. So he's already got the arts.
The OJs, that's like a Philly connection, right?
Are they from Philly?
I don't know.
I don't even know. I don't know. Whatever. Anyway.
I'm wrong. I'm going to feel so stupid.
Dude, I do it every single week. I'm like, let me say some things that I think I know what I'm talking about. And they're always wrong. I should fact check a little bit before I say stuff.
It's hard to fact check on the fly.
Yeah.
But yeah, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, excited about that guy. Plays really great defense. Needs to work on his shooting, but he was injured for much of last season, so he started to show promise, had like a double-double in a game and was starting to feel good, and then hurt his ankle, broke his ankle, and then...
Yeah.
That broke... I think he broke it, yeah. But then, the other player I'm excited about is Chris McCullough.
Really? I don't know anything about him, but go ahead, tell me about him.
He played at Syracuse, and he only played 15 games at Syracuse, but he was supposed to be... He was projected, anyway, to be a lottery pick. Until he got injured there, I can't remember. I think tore his meniscus or something. I'm not sure. And he still went into the draft. He went into the draft injured, and the Nets picked him up. And you know, he didn't play for most of last season. So people kind of look at that as like, yeah, they picked him up late in the draft, but he still could be considered a lottery pick if his potential comes through, and he's somebody this summer who's been working a lot in the gym with Atkinson. And so anyway, those are the players I'm following right now.
What about the point guard they just picked up in the draft too? Oh my God. I just forgot his name.
Yeah, me too.
It doesn't matter. It's going to come back to me in like 2 seconds. I'm gonna be like, why didn't I say that? Anyway, I think the thing that they're doing now, this is why I like Sean Marks. I think he's making like obvious, really good choices. Like, this is what you should do when you have no other choice. They have no draft picks. You know, they can't get any free agents to come there. But they're like, they traded Thaddeus Young, who I love. But they got Caris LeVert, who was injured in the draft and should have gone much higher than he did if he was healthy. He wasn't. So they took they took a gamble on him. This is what you have to do now.
Right.
And same thing with McCullough, right?
Yeah. And I think, and Atkinson is perfect because he has a reputation of somebody. He played, he never played in the NBA. He almost cracked into the NBA, I think, with Orlando. And because they have stories about him going up against, I can't remember who it was, some point guard for the Magic, you know, however many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that he would wear them out. Like, completely wear them out in practice because he was the guy who was, you know, was never, of course, never supposed to make it. He
right.
just didn't have the build or the athleticism necessarily. But he was such a workhorse that he got himself into playing for, he played for 20 different teams overseas, I think played for 14 years, something like that. And he just has that tenacity that he's carried into the players that he's worked with. I think, you know, Jeff Teague had a lot of good things to say about him and those guys. And so I think he's perfect because, you know, if you have like a Doc Rivers or somebody like that gets this Brooklyn team, it's like, ugh. Like, they're expected to do magic, you know? But I think with Atkinson, it's like he's seen everything in his life as a challenge in terms of basketball that he's like, okay, cool. This is a challenge I can do. And that's the guy you want in there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, totally. Especially for, like, I think they're the 10th youngest team now, where they're like, the average age is just like 25.
Yeah.
You definitely want that. You want somebody who's going to bring them on. I think he's known for player development, right? I don't know what kind of system he's going to run, but I guess it doesn't really matter.
No, he doesn't have, and that's what I appreciate too, is he's looking at the talent and saying, you know, he's not coming in with a system. He's looking at who he has and
figuring out
developing
how
it that way and trying to figure out how you're going to switch people. And that, you know, like they talk about, you know, they've had Hollis Jefferson playing the two, but he can't shoot.
Right.
So they're like, why is he playing the two? They had him playing the two all last year. So I think his whole thing is going to be trying to switch up positions and see what the lineup is going to be. It's going to be interesting. They're not going to be great, but another thing one of the marketing directors said, she was like, yeah, but what's going to be good about this team is that people, you know, the audience always likes to watch a team play hard.
Right.
Even if they lose. And I would say that for sure, because there were times when I watched the Nets when it was like Darren Williams, Brooke Lopez, Joe Johnson, and it's just like,
they're not really trying.
Oh, my God. How many Christmas days? Oh, there's a Christmas day. I think they lost by 30 points and everybody was booing.
Yeah.
Just booing,
as they
like,
should have been.
Yeah, because it's like, come on. We're here. Like, show us you care. And I think that people can, if they see you working as hard as you can, they can get behind that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're talking about the Sixers for the last 3 years. But anyway.
Was anybody at those Sixers games,
me,
Joe? Did you?
Me.
How full were the stands?
Not. They're not full at all. They look like the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah, how cheap are the tickets?
Really cheap.
Yeah, that's
really
why
cheap. Yeah. I think that the tickets are going to be cheap again this year too for the Nets.
Oh yeah, but that's going to be great.
But I actually think they're going to win in the 30s. I don't think they're going to be quite as bad as people are projecting. I don't think they'll be the worst team in the league. I don't even know if they'll be the worst three of the league.
Yeah, you never know.
Who knows?
I believe in them. I believe something good is going to happen.
Yeah, and then you got to look around the league and think, like, well, if they're not going to be that bad, who's going to be worse? So that maybe they will.
You never know.
I mean, the Sixers are obviously going to be terrible. The Lakers are going to be terrible, but they don't. You know, they're not in the same conference even. But whatever.
Right.
Anyway, things to talk about. Besides that, would be they picked up Scola, right? Did they get Luis Scola?
They did.
Vasquez.
Vasquez.
So he's going to, great. Grievous Vasquez is going to be good on that team. He'll start.
Yeah.
And then they'll have Lynn. They'll have Vasquez. They'll have Lopez.
Mm-hmm.
Who's their other starting two?
One person we have not talked about, which we should have, and especially really Olympics, Bojan Bogdanović, from Croatia.
Yeah,
I believe he had the highest. He scored 33 points.
He's like
in a game.
An unrepentant shooter. He's just like, let me shoot the ball.
I saw a game last year that he scored 44 in a game. He actually got them into the playoffs last year against Orlando. One game he beat. We're one game out of the playoffs, and he basically won the game by scoring like 27 points or something in that game.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he's a great shooter. His defense, I think, is questionable. But again, I think it's all about your coaching and how somebody, you know, puts you in the right position and they exploit, you know, what's best about your game. I think that's the most important thing. So, I mean, he clearly shows potential, you know.
Yeah.
Huge potential.
How old is he, do you know?
He's young.
25 maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah. again, stats I should probably look up before I start talking about
people. Who cares? They're all young.
Listen,
they're a lot younger than me.
We're artists. We just make this shit up on the fly.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah. Anyway, Steph, I think maybe, do you want to wrap it up or have any more to talk about?
What do you have to talk about?
I mean, I've always
I could go on all day about whatever, but
we're talkers.
I have nothing to say about the Nets. That's for sure. That's one of those things that's like, all right, we'll see how this plays out.
Yeah.
And yeah, everything else about, I think there's nothing I can say about the NBA that hasn't already been said so many times this summer.
Of course.
So it's, yeah, let's get into the season. Let me see, show me what you got, Kevin Durant.
This time of year is also like hard because nothing is happening. Like you really have to search for things that are like of interest.
Well, we're a couple weeks away from camp.
Camp, I know. I'm so looking forward to it. Anyway, but so you can find Steph's website at, what was it again?
StephCostelloProjects.com.
Spell it out.
StephCostelloProjects.com.
Cool. And it's good stuff on there. And you can follow Steph on Twitter.
STEPHROK1.
Steph Rock.
The number one.
Yeah. And buy some of her artwork because she's a very talented, very talented artist.
Yeah.
You can reach the show at, wait, what is it again?
I don't know.
Yeah, thanks.
It's your show.
You can reach us at on Twitter at SuperFlightPod. You can get in touch with us by emailing us at thesuperflightpodcast@gmail.com. You can go to the website, which is thesuperflightpodcast.com. You can follow on Stitcher, SoundCloud, iTunes, and Google Play, and I think a number of other things in Australia. Hi, Australia. And I don't know. I'm going to have some more guests coming up, and these are going to be sporadic while we're on this summer break. But thanks for coming, Steph, and I would love to have you come again and talk more.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, man. Anyway, it's good talking to you.
Great talking to you, too.
All right. Bye.